From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025. Today, the Maine Department of Health and Human Services suspended MaineCare payments to a Portland-based provider over suspected fraud. This new development brings fresh scrutiny to Gateway Community Services, which was already under the microscope for overbilling the state's Medicaid program. State House Bureau Chief Steve Missler is here to break it all down. So, Steve, Gateway Community Services has been in the spotlight recently because two previous audits found that it had overbilled MaineCare to the tune of about $660,000. But you learned today that there was a third and previously unreported audit that has prompted this suspension of payments and likely triggered an investigation by the state attorney general's office. What can you tell us?
Right. So this third audit was just completed, Nicole. It found a number of billing irregularities by Gateway that DHHS considers pretty serious, so much so that it imposed this suspension of payments to the company and quite likely referred the matter to the Attorney General's office for an investigation. A spokesperson for the AG would not confirm that investigation, which is pretty standard practice for that office. However, DHHS indicated that an investigation referral is required when there's suspected fraud. And of course, the suspected fraud is the reason for the payment suspension.
And how much overbilling was uncovered in this new audit?
The notice of violation pegged the overbilling at more than $1 million. So that's on top of the $660,000 uncovered in the previous audits. It's also important to note that overbilling in Medicaid doesn't always mean fraud occurred. In fact, overbilling cases can be appealed and penalties can be adjusted. That appeared to be the case with Gateway, although DHHS had suggested that overbillings that total more than $100,000 are unusual, and the overbilling in the three audits are well above that threshold.
What is Gateway saying in response to all of this?
Well, an attorney for the company seemed somewhat surprised by this new sanction by DHHS, but he stood by Gateway's previous denials that no fraud has occurred. The company can also appeal this decision.
We recently reported that Gateway had denied allegations by a former employee that it had falsified billing records and bilked Maine taxpayers. How does this fit into all of that?
Well, the company has basically said the employee, Chris Bernardini, is disgruntled after getting laid off earlier this year. They also said that he had, quote, end-to-end insight into every stage of the billing process, end quote, but he didn't ever raise any concerns. Gateway went on to describe him as territorial about the workflow process up until he was laid off in April.
Did this recent audit occur before or after he was laid off?
Before. DHHS says it was initiated in 2023. This former employee made his allegations earlier this year after he was laid off.
And Steve, a key part of this story is how it's been framed in conservative media, right? And that's because Gateway was founded by a Somali American and several of its officials are also Somali, right?
Yeah, that is definitely an important piece of context, Nicole. In fact, conservative activists are also trying to connect Gateway to a much bigger fraud scandal that's unfolding in Minnesota that also involves Somali American social services providers. The scale of that fraud is staggering, according to federal prosecutors, involving billions in taxpayer money. And it's also what prompted President Trump to lash out against all Somali immigrants in recent comments that have drawn widespread condemnation. The money involved in the Gateway case is but a fraction of what's going on in Minnesota, but it's been pulled into the same national spotlight as some activists try to frame this around Trump's immigration crackdown. Gateway has also drawn the attention of Republicans on the Oversight Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives, which is investigating the Minnesota case. That committee has asked the U.S. Treasury for banking records by Gateway that may have been flagged by financial institutions for suspected fraud.
So what's next here, Steve?
Well, we'll have to wait and see what the Attorney General finds, if in fact there's an investigation. So this is just a story that's going to continue to unfold in the coming weeks and months. So stay tuned.
That's Maine Public State House Bureau Chief Steve Missler. The National Weather Service says the system moving into Maine today will be a complete snow event for just about everybody, with most accumulation occurring overnight.
So we're certainly expecting tomorrow morning to be a messy commute as well, especially in coastal Maine, the mid-coast area, where it'll likely still be snowing.
Meteorologist John Palmer says the mid-coast could see more than a foot of snow, the rest of the state 8 to 12 inches except for York County, where totals will be lower. Snow is expected to taper off by noon tomorrow. The Weather Service says over the last 70 years, Portland has had a white Christmas 42 times, which is more than 50%. A New York woman pleaded guilty in U.S. District Court in Bangor last week to operating an unlicensed marijuana growing operation in central Maine. Caitlin Bedayan has more.
According to court records, Jiamin Liao, a Chinese national living in New York, bought two properties in Madison and Norridgewock several years ago. Federal agents began investigating the properties after discovering a significant increase in electrical usage at the Madison home. The Somerset County Sheriff's Office searched the two houses last March and found more than 500 marijuana plants in Madison and roughly 30 pounds of processed marijuana in Norridgewock. According to the plea agreement, Liao will plead guilty to one count of maintaining a drug-involved premises, and a second count will be dismissed. She faces a sentence of up to 20 years in prison, followed by up to 3 years of supervised release, and a maximum fine of $500,000. As part of the agreement, Liao also waives any claim to the almost $60,000 found in the two properties during the search. A date for a plea hearing in the case has not been scheduled. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
A Newcastle mother is petitioning the U.S. Supreme Court to take up her case about a school district's handling of her child's gender transition. Amber Levine claims a school counselor at Great Salt Bay Community School in Damariscotta secretly encouraged her 13-year-old daughter to wear a chest binder and use a different name and pronouns. Levine sued the school 2 years ago, alleging that school officials violated her right to control and direct the upbringing of her child. A federal judge sided with the district and Levine appealed, but the First Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston dismissed the appeal. Now Levine's attorneys argue that the U.S. Supreme Court should hear the case. They point to other cases in Massachusetts and Florida that raise similar questions about parental rights. Penobscot County will distribute $400,000 of its available opioid settlement funds as grants to 12 recovery organizations and treatment centers. County commissioners approved the awards in its regular meeting this week. Proposed projects include bolstering youth outreach, hiring recovery coaches, and buying vehicles for emergency transportation. Grant manager Wendy Dana highlighted funds for the Access Direct Recovery Network to expand its 24/7 substance use disorder call center, the only such center in the state.
For the call center, I mean, that could potentially help hundreds, you know, thousands of people who are on that, you know, front taking those calls.
This first round of grants received more than two dozen applications that tap Penobscot County's opioid settlement dollars. Penobscot is set to receive roughly $4.5 million from opioid settlements by 2038. Since August, Maine has faced a persistent drought. Rivers and streams are running low, and more than 540 residential wells have run dry in communities like Freiburg, where a dozen families were forced to rely on bottled water over the summer. The Maine-based Poland Spring Bottled Water Company, which draws from sources in Freiburg, among other sites, said at the time it was voluntarily reducing withdrawals. But when a reporter from the national advocacy journalism outlet More Perfect Union investigated, the data showed withdrawals in Denmark and Freiburg had actually increased. And as Susan Sharon reports, residents are now seeking more control of their water supplies.
Here's how media outlets, including Maine Public Radio, reported Poland Spring's actions in September of this year.
As of September 1st, the company says they implemented a, quote, significant reduction in withdrawals at their Clear Spring site in Hollis, along with cutbacks in Freiburg and other locations across Maine.
As many parts of the Northeast face severe and extreme drought conditions, the bottled water company Poland Spring says they're cutting back the amount of water being drawn from Central Springs in Maine.
That includes the Clear Spring in Hollis and the Evergreen Spring in Freiburg.
Paul Blest, a reporter with More Perfect Union, decided to take a closer look. Freiburg and Denmark make monthly water withdrawal reports publicly available on their town websites. Blest discovered that during the month of September, Poland Spring was taking more water from both places than it did in September the two previous years.
In September 2023, they took out 5.3 million gallons from Freiburg. And then in 2024, they took out 5.6 million. In this September, they took out 12.2 million. So it's double what they took out last year. It's also, you know, more than they took out in September 2023 and September 2024 combined.
But Poland Spring stands by its actions and its commitment to long-term sustainability. In a written statement, a company spokesperson said that in response to the drought, Poland Spring did reduce withdrawals in Freiburg and other towns between August and September of this year. She also pointed to Freiburg's maximum sustainable yield set at 600,000 gallons per day by the town hydrogeologist. Water collection in Freiburg was reduced to approximately 410,000 gallons per day in August and September of this year, which is about 70% of the sustainable yield of the aquifer, she said. Of course, there are many ways to look at the numbers. Maine Public's own review of the monthly withdrawal data found that over the past 2 years, between January and September, Poland Spring's withdrawals increased by more than 40% in Freiburg and nearly 23% in Denmark.
I guess I was surprised that they had publicized that they had lowered their withdrawal and that, in fact, it had increased.
Gregory Hongdale is the chair of the Freiburg Select Board, who, along with other town officials, has also seen the numbers.
I wasn't surprised that they were taking as much as they can, because that is a market-driven system, and if they can sell it, they'll withdraw it. It's possible that they slowed other places, but not in Freiburg.
Because the Freiburg Water Company, a private utility, has a controversial long-term contract with Poland Spring, the Select Board's only role is monitoring monthly reports. It can't control water withdrawals. But the utility, which owns the local water sources and supplies water to the town, does have that power. Bill Leatham, a trustee for the Freiburg Water District, says it's just not clear how the company responded during the drought.
They refused to talk to us.
Speaking at a recent Freiburg Select Board meeting, Leatham asked board members to deliver a message to the owners of the private utility.
We would love to buy the Freiburg Water Company and turn this into a public entity, so you and everyone in this room has an opportunity to be controlling our own water.
The Freiburg Water District was established by the legislature 20 years ago as a way for residents to purchase the private water company should its owners ever decide to sell. Leatham says trustees recently sent a letter to the company expressing their interest in taking it over, only to have the letter returned in the mail.
I'm angry and frustrated, and I wish we had control of our water.
Emily Strahler also serves as a trustee for the Freiburg Water District. She says it was concerning to hear that other residents' wells dried up over the summer, and then find out that Poland Spring is extracting more water from the town this year than it did last. She and Leatham suspect that the reason the Freiburg Water Company doesn't want to discuss a sale is because it's doing well financially. Leatham says if the utility were publicly owned, profits would be returned to the town.
We could still be selling water to Poland Springs, but there would be a lot more transparency.
A call to the Freiburg Water Company seeking comment for this story was not returned by airtime. Freiburg Select Board members say they'll attempt to meet with company representatives early next year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For a detailed look at water withdrawals in Freiburg and Denmark, visit our website at mainepublic.org. Last month, President Trump issued an executive order removing tariffs on imported cocoa and coffee, but chocolate prices had already been rising in recent years due to weak cocoa crop yields linked to weather, and Maine chocolate makers say they're still experiencing high costs of production. Maddie Smith visited Wilbur's of Maine Chocolate Confections in Freeport, which is trying to keep up with customer demand, even after increasing prices by 10%.
In a chilly 50-degree room, a batch of Wilbur's popular chocolate blueberries is taking shape.
This machine that you're seeing has two big wheels that drive a belt. It makes this kind of trough where all the centers sit, and they roll around on each other.
Andy Wilbur, owner of Wilbur's Chocolate Confections, says this is a belt coater, which slowly drizzles chocolate down onto a moving belt and evenly distributes chocolate on whatever centers, be they nuts or in this case blueberries, are placed in it.
And then we've got a manifold up above that has three different rows, and each of the rows feeds it with a different type of chocolate.
But Wilbur says the chocolate he's using costs almost three times what it did before the pandemic. And the machine is from the 1980s. A new one, he says, could increase production of coated items by fivefold. But the machines are only made in the UK. And between the depreciation of the dollar and a 10% tariff, they cost $60,000 more than just a year ago. All of this means he has not been able to keep up with demand for the last 5 years.
So we've had customers that we haven't been able to get product to as quickly as they needed it, or sometimes, you know, because you lose the sale. You know, if you don't sell it in September and you get it to them in November, then they've lost 2 months of being able to sell that product. So that builds on itself.
Wilbur says because of production costs, he's already increased prices up to 10% this year, the largest increase in almost 40 years the company has been in business. And he's not the only Maine chocolate producer that's had to increase prices this year.
And we've been paying tariffs, like a ton of tariffs.
Kate McAleer, owner of Bixby Chocolate in Rockland, says even though the cocoa tariffs have been lifted, she's still affected by tariffs on aluminum and organic cane sugar.
At the end of the day, we are a manufacturer making things in America. So some sort of like tax relief or something, I think, is important to offset those increased costs from the tariff perspective.
Ryan Peters, owner of Perkins Cove Candy in Wells, says candy makers are increasing their prices not to make more profit, but to cover costs. In the end, he says, the consumer gets less for their money.
People are going to come in and spend a certain amount. It's just going to depend on how much they get for that amount. So they're not going to spend more necessarily. They have an amount in mind that they're going to spend. They're just not going to end up getting as much.
So we're out of pecan turtles.
Yeah, big ones.
Yeah.
Back at Wilbur's, a steady stream of customers have been coming through the door all morning. Most of them, like Michael Corvo of Lewiston, are regulars.
I come here every Christmas to get something for all my grandkids.
Corvo works in town at L.L. Bean and has been coming to Wilbur's every December for 36 years.
I've never heard anything bad about the candy from my grandkids, so they kind of look forward to it.
To keep Corvo and other loyal customers happy, Andy Wilbur says he's expanding his production space next month and hopes to find the money to purchase a new belt coater from the UK, even with a 10% tariff added to the price tag. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Tomorrow's Maine Calling will be preempted by special holiday programming. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.